Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 3, Episode 26, The Adversary, teleplay by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolfe, and directed by Alexander Singer. This episode aired on June 25th, 1995.
This week on Deep Space Nine, a Federation ambassador brings newly promoted Captain Sisko orders to take the Defiant on a patrol of the Zenkathy border, where a destabilizing coup has just taken place. But everything is not as it seems. We have a different way of starting this podcast than our typical question that I ask you at the start of every episode. How are we starting this podcast, Elise?
It's funny that you ask, because we have our first listener email that is not from one of our friends.
Yay!
I'm very excited about this.
Would you like to read it?
I would love to read it.
Okay.
It's titled Pod Wraiths. Hi, just saying hi. Your last episode, Elise said that you don't have many followers, or the only followers are your friends. I am a 53-year-old female Star Trek fan living in Minnesota and have been listening to and have been listening since about June 2021 as I work my way through Deep Space Nine for the first time with my hubby. I love your podcast and love all the deep and irreverent thoughts. Thank you. I'm usually thirsting for Jadzia or Kira. Thank you for your podcast, Kristen. Thank you so much, Kristen. This really made my week when we received this.
Can confirm. I not only got the email forwarded to me excitedly, but I was also texted about it, and I believe it was mentioned in our Discord, too. So.
It is really nice to know that there are other people listening. Tell your friends.
Is there life out there? So much she hasn't done. Is there life beyond her family and her podcast home? She's done what she should. Should she do what she dare? She doesn't want to leave. She's just wondering if anyone's listening out there. Thank you for all my Reba McEntire stans who are now mad at me for adjusting those lyrics on the fly. Also, fun fact, in the music video to Is There Life Out There, Huey Lewis plays Reba's husband because they're friends. All right, enough about 90s era Reba McEntire. Now it's all about Season 3, Episode 26 of Deep Space Nine. Elise, we're done Season 3.
Crazy. Do not believe it.
Well, and it's funny, right? Because, you know, you think about, like, modern seasons only being, like, you know, 10-ish episodes, give or take. It's like, okay, yeah, Season 3 doesn't take that long to get there. And it's like, no, this is like 90s TV. This is episode 26 of season 3. So yes. It's like, if this was like a modern show like Game of Thrones, we'd be like halfway through the series by now.
I think we would be like really done with the series, actually.
Yeah.
It's really funny because the last episode, we do record a little behind the scenes. We do record a little ahead. So we're recording the season finale of Season 3, but the last episode that dropped was Shakar, and when I went to look at Pocket Casts today, I noticed that Shakar was our 69th episode.
Nice.
Yeah, I was very excited about that. So, yeah, we're coming up on 70 episodes. It's crazy.
What if I just numbered every other episode 69 from now on?
69 like plus 1, 69 plus 2.
69A, 69B. So like, we'll do it like dash A, dash B, like Enterprises.
You'll end up getting to like AA, like AB. We'll start just like putting blood types on the end. That would be very silly, yeah, but I don't think you should do that.
All right. So Elise, did you or did you not remember season 3, episode 26? The adversary and or the adversary, depending on who you talk to.
I did not remember this episode really, like vaguely. I don't know. I don't think
what
it rang too
you
many
remember?
Bells.
What did you remember? Did you remember?
I don't know.
It's fine.
I know. I just said it like that, like to be a baby. I didn't remember it, but I found the episode to be a lot of fun. I really enjoy the, like, we don't know who the mole is bit. And it was really funny when I was watching with AJ. As everyone now knows, I usually watch the episodes with my friend AJ.
Hi, AJ.
He mentioned that it reminded him, like, of a game of Among Us, which I've never played, but I know the concept, so that definitely made sense to me.
Yeah? No, it very much is, like, the whole, like, idea of, you know, deception and trying to figure out who the saboteur or the deceiver is. I mean, Mafia would be another example.
Oh, or, right, for sure. You know,
all my other board game freaks out there might be familiar with Resistance, which is kind of a very similar sort of like table talk, find out the spy sort of game. We'll get more into this kind of a bit later as our discussion on the episode goes ahead. But at times this episode is very reminiscent of the movie to me, like The Thing, or even the X-Files episode that also feels like The Thing. It's the one in, I think it's, I can't remember if it's the North Pole or like Antarctica, where they drill down and there's those weird like spores in the ice cores from like a long time ago that, you know, make people do weird shit and paranoid and same sort of thing. So we love a like claustrophobic, we can't trust anyone sort of tale.
Is this where I admit that I've never seen The Thing? But now you have me curious about it when I've never been curious about it previous.
Interesting, because I was just about to say, like, I'm sure you've like been aware of it through like cultural osmosis, but maybe not.
Probably. Yeah, like I didn't know like even what the premise of it. I don't know what the premise is.
Oh, well, then I will not ruin it for you.
Thank you. while I was doing some reading on this episode, I saw that Iris Stephen Bear had said that this episode specifically was, I'm paraphrasing here, moved the show closer towards serialization, because this is, I mean, you can tell by the way the episode ends, it really leaves things open in a suspenseful way that you're like, okay, then they have to address what happened here. At least that's how I feel about the episode.
Yeah, and I mean, we will we'll dive more into this and kind of the air quotes dreaded S word, as Ira calls it, serialization, more as the show goes forward, and as much as like they weren't supposed to be serialized, a lot of it does come across that way and it does get more serialized. And even like season 6 starts with like a 6 episode like direct serialization arc, and then the show ends with like a 10-hour, like, it's not a 10-hour finale, like, it's a 2-hour, like, TV movie finale, but all the episodes leading up to that run is like a 10, like, it's like a whole, would be a whole season of television now, right? Like, it's your 10 episodes that are, like, serialized and, like, everything else.
Yes.
Which the reasons that the studios and stuff didn't want them to be more and more serialized is because, like, Next Generation before it, Deep Space Nine was a first-run syndicated television show, right? So it wasn't airing on any particular network. It was it was a first-run syndication show. So various like local channels bought the show and then could, you know, air it whenever, right? Normally you'd see syndication in like reruns. That's how they is it. But this is a first-run, so a new show in syndication. So like they didn't want serialization because it made the show harder to sell, because you didn't know when it was going to air on different times and things like that. But they slowly started flirting with it anyways. And then that being, even though Voyager ended up being that more kind of non-serialized-ish TNG sort of format, it helped launch the UPN network at that time. So it wasn't a first-run serialized show. It helped launch UPN, which is funny, and it's kind of coming full circle, because before Star Trek The Motion Picture was a thing, when they were talking about, you know, it being a TV show earlier in development of Star Trek Phase 2, the original intent of doing that show was to launch a Paramount television network that didn't end up getting launched in the late 70s. So everything's old is new again. Comes full circle. Time is a flat circle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So we got some big news this episode.
Yeah, we're losing Commander Sisko. It was like that would have been such a shock in that kind of opening, that opening log to start the episode and the teaser before the credits. It's like
I really enjoyed the fake out a lot. Of course, we're referring to Sisko stating that it's his final commander's log, and he's saying it with so somberly, like as if he's leaving Deep Space Nine. But what really is happening is he's being promoted to captain, and Lizzo's a song About Damn Time plays in the background. I don't think that when I first watched this show, I noticed, like, I paid any attention to this, like, his ranking at any time, until someone told me it was, like, a big deal.
Really?
Yeah, I just, like, didn't care about that kind of thing. I mean, I know when people are ensign or cadets, like, they're, you know, pretty low on in the organizational chart, but, like, other than that, I just never really... I just, okay, that person's in charge of that person. I never really thought about, like, anyone's ranks. I do now, but, like, not when I first watched this.
This kind of feels like the first time you were watching Deep Space Nine, and everyone was, like, excited when you started season 3 and the introduction of the Defiant, and you're like, wait, what's the Defiant?
Yeah, like, I, like, totally missed that, like, a new ship was, like, introduced, and it was a big deal. Like, and then when we rewatched, and I remember when that happened, and then when we rewatched it for the podcast, like, it's like, so obvious. Sometimes I do think that, you know, the first time I was watching it, you know, I'm not watching it to record a podcast on it. So I probably tuned things in and out if I was, like, doing more than one thing at a time, which I'm known to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. Fair. Fair enough.
So this might not be a thing, but I kept thinking about the title of this episode being The Adversary, and how Captain Sisko is the emissary, and just how the words are similar sounding, they have the same number of syllables, and it just, because an emissary is a representative and an adversary is an opponent, like those words just feel very related to me. I don't know. I might be overthinking this, but it just seemed like an interesting thought.
Yeah, I don't think you're necessarily overthinking it. Like, I didn't catch this. I didn't look at it, but I really do like this, the idea, and like kind of then further thinking about the title, the titular adversary, again, you want to think that it's the changeling infiltrator, but ultimately it could be our own distrust of each other and how quickly we can lose ourselves in and to paranoia. Like, there are definitely parts of this episode that, like, definitely made, again, we talked about the thing, but it made me think also of, like, the whole, like, 70s subgenre of, like, the paranoid thriller, and kind of that distrust, and, you know, not so much the surveillance aspects, but definitely that, you know, who can we trust and who's close to us, and like even the use of, you know, Eddington as like a bit of that kind of red herring too. It's just no, it's good. I think the title works on a couple different levels.
When they were toasting Captain Sisko, I really giggled when O'Brien tells Sisko he's the best captain. I agree with him. I don't think he's wrong, but it's funny to remember that O'Brien has served under two captains that we've seen on television.
Well, a couple of things, Elise. My first question is, how dare, why do you hate women? I'm kidding. Just had to throw that in there for the Janeway stands. I think, like, this isn't my candidate for the most Star Trek thing, but it could be. There's always a crew member that says that show's captain is the best they've ever served with, and, like, is the best captain in the fleets, and it's like,
right.
O'Brien's throwing shade at Jean-Luc here. It's like,
yes, because, you know, other times it's not like the person had a previous captain before, so, like, it feels very just a nice thing, but this one, it does feel a little shady. So the other part of this episode is about a saboteur, as we've discussed, but I do like that they kind of, it's not really an A plot, B plot thing. Like, I think the fact that Sisko is getting his promotion is just, I don't mean, okay, scrap the word just, is something very important, but also springs the rest of the plot, because we have Ambassador Krajewski there. He's there to celebrate this promotion, but he's also there to tell Sisko that a coup has taken place on the
Zenkethi.
Thank you. I was saying it over and over earlier because I was like trying to say it correctly, and then, you know, a lot's happened since then, so I like lost it. That a coup has taken place on the Zenkethi homeworld. So he is the one that tells Sisko to take the Defiant into that sector and remind them that the Federation is nearby, and the ambassador wants to come along too. And it's interesting because everyone just is like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm not unique in this too, and I mean, I could have probably looked this up more, but like, I didn't. I guess another kind of for Star Trek, most Star Trek thing would be like introduction of a new species we only know by name that apparently had a war with Starfleet that we've never heard of.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
that's
that
true.
Is what
and
it
like
is.
Everybody, yeah, like Sisko is like says in at one part of the episode, like, all my feelings about this from the last war are bad, and we're just like, so, you know, supposed to take everyone at their word because we didn't see any of it.
Yeah, and like, I mean, TNG kind of did this as well, because like the Cardassians weren't introduced till later, and we find out that, you know, there'd been like this Cardassian like ongoing border wars through like the first,
right,
you know, before TNG started, and like obviously like on and off like during the first couple seasons up until the Cardassians were introduced. But like, what I find the most interesting about that is like, I'm not like annoyed about it, whatever, it's part of world building.
Yeah,
but it really kind of peels back the curtains on like what was happening off screen in the world, in the universe. But like, I'm sure some people are annoyed or could be annoyed because it like seems antithetical to like how conflict three and free and evolved, and or how dull the first couple seasons of TNG were, and kind of Roddenberry's like perspective on that. It's like, I'm sure he wouldn't have liked the idea that Starfleet was at war during that time, but fuck it. It's better
right,
for drama, honey.
Yes. Oh, that's so funny. I always think about, I didn't think about it from that perspective, that like they're adding like history to like Roddenberry's time, you know?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, and I've always kind of wondered, and I don't think this is unique to me or probably a super original thought, but like if the Zenkethi were supposed to be the Kzinti, which the Kzinti are in Star Trek, the animated series from the 70s. Do you remember like the cat people in the pink spacesuits or purple spacesuits?
Yes,
or
and
whatever?
Yes, and I will say that for the 2 minutes that I did a Star Trek RPG, one of my specialties was on that species, but I actually never researched it, so I didn't find out anything about that species.
Yeah, and like I think the reason it went to like the Zenkethi instead of the Kzinti, like more specifically, is that the Kzinti were a species that was developed independently of Star Trek, and well before they appeared on Star Trek the Animated Series, the science fiction author Larry Niven, they're his own creation that he had his own kind of, you know, book series and everything else for. And I think that was what the episode like was used or like adapted from, right? Yeah, he was invited to like adapt his own story for Star Trek the Animated Series. So I think they couldn't use it because of like a whole a whole like rights thing, because it wasn't like the Kzinti weren't created for Star Trek, they were adapted and then massaged into Star Trek and like didn't belong to Star Trek, right? So
that's interesting. I wonder, like, because we don't even see this species now in this episode. So I, like, wonder if we've like, ever, like, they just could have pulled like a word out of their ass. Like, it doesn't even matter because we never see them. I mean, we might. I think that this is the only episode that they're mentioned in, based on what I'm looking at. They might have been in some novels, but like, and Star Trek Online, but like, this is the only time that they're in an episode or mentioned. That's pretty interesting. So I feel like the main plot of this episode is very like, listen, all y'all, it's a saboteur. I really hate myself because I cannot say the word sabotage or saboteur without singing the song. But also, like, it's so ingrained in Star Trek now that I like feel like it's relevant.
I thought you were gonna say you didn't know how to, like, the proper way to pronounce sabotage because of William Shatner saying it in the sabotage.
I probably learned the word sabotage because of the Beastie Boys, so I would say I learned from a better source.
Well, that's okay, because to bring it all full circle, I'm sure lots of younger listeners or Trekkies would have learned about that song from Star Trek.
Oh, totally. I would agree with that.
Time is a flat circle. Time is a flat circle.
You don't get any more of those per episode for this episode. Two is your limit. So we're on the Defiant, and shit starts getting weird immediately. I actually was, because I didn't remember the episode, I wondered if this was going to be an O'Brien Suffers episode, because the first scene on the Defiant is him, like, thinking he's hearing sounds, and then, like, when he's, like, alone, and I guess we finally see engineering on the Defiant, so we have a lot more sets in this episode on the Defiant, and I just thought it was going to be, like, O'Brien hearing shit the whole episode. I'm glad it wasn't that.
Yeah, and like you point out, we see three new Defiant sets in this episode that become like reusable standing sets. We see engineering for the first time, as you say. We see the Defiant mess hall for the first time. And there's like a new kind of hallway set that's like, or corridor set that's like extended or something like that. So always nice to see more parts of the Defiant, right? And it's kind of, when you think about it, it's kind of weird we never saw engineering before.
Yeah. I mean, it's all the ship's only been on one season, so I feel like,
fair,
you know, I think as the show goes on, they use the Defiant more and more. So Dax and O'Brien find some bad stuff that's happening in some sort of control panel. I kind of like tune that out because, you know, blah 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 blah. But I didn't tune out when O'Brien turns this into a Star War and says, I have a bad feeling about this. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did.
I was like, Jesus Christ. I thought that was very funny and very silly. And I wonder, I'm like surprised that like slipped its way in somehow. I wonder if it was like lack of oversight or like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I'm so happy that they threw that in there, because it's so dumb.
Yeah, so, like, the whole idea is that the sabotage exists because, like, they lose all command functions of the ship, and they're en route to this, like, Zenkethi colony to, they think, to investigate and or retaliate what they believe is a Zenkethi attack on a Federation colony, like, following the coup. And it turns out that there is a changeling saboteur aboard who is basically trying to start a war between the Federation and the Zenkethi, you know, kind of similar to how they removed the threat of the Cardassians and the Romulans earlier this season with the dies cast and, mm-hmm. you know, doing the false flag on the changeling homeworld.
Yes.
So we are rushing to, the Defiant is rushing to Oblivion, and we have to find a way to stop it and stop the saboteur.
This is not the first part of this episode that makes me think of my favorite Star Trek film, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, because when Sisko is like, someone on the ship is guilty of sabotage, I was thinking of Valeris saying, like, giving the definition for saboteur. in the Star Trek movie, played by Kim Cattrall. We love it.
They threw their wood shoes into the machines. Sabu, hence the word sabotage.
Yes, it's great. Odo kind of calls this early on when they realize that there's a saboteur. He's like, maybe the coup isn't even real, you know? And we find out that that is exactly the truth. The ambassador never came to Deep Space Nine. It's interesting because they say this at the end of the episode, but I felt it here, where because a changeling was able to impersonate an ambassador, like, it's very clear to me that a changeling could be anyone. And that is something, they hit it really hard at the end of the episode, but this is the part where I thought it to myself. And I was like, this can open a whole world of stories.
Shining, shimmering, splendid.
Now tell me. Sorry. Whenever we have a situation where you don't know who to trust, you have to invoke the buddy system. It's just the rules of television and movies. And Sisko knows this, so he tells everyone, you know, get a buddy. They like to put Odo and Eddington together, which I think is kind of weird because I know they do it because they have such different outlooks on security, but it's weird to me because they're like the two highest security officers. So like they should each be with a lower ranking person in my mind. That just seems to make the most sense to me, but I know there would be less, the dialogue wouldn't be as good then. And you know, Eddington offers him a weapon, and Odo reiterates that he doesn't like to use weapons, and he doesn't kill anyone. He has not killed anyone so far. This whole thing is very weird to me because of the world that we live in right now, where cops are seriously dangerous people. It just reminds me of how idealistic Star Trek is, which I think, you know, it would be wonderful to live in a world where that, you know, nope, I'm not even going to say that because I don't think that there's any wonderful world with cops. But like, it would be really nice if they didn't have weapons. Like, that would be that's very idealistic because we know in our world that is not, or at least in the United States, that is not something that, like, I can't picture it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things, right? Where it's like, I get what they're going for. And it's like, not to like rehash the conversations we've had about some of the complexities of Odo. I think like every five episodes or so since we started season one. Yes. Like, it's supposed to set him apart and, you know, he's, like, different and, like, has this, like, really strong sense of his own moral code and the idea of, like, why he was, you know, respected by both the oppressed and the oppressors during the occupation and things like that. But, like, he still worked with the fascists, but he gets a pass. But I just, like, for myself personally, I don't think it's, like, it's definitely, I think, a valid, you know, observation and point of criticism, but I choose not to see it because otherwise I drive myself crazy.
That's totally fair. I mean, I was just talking to you earlier about something on Star Trek Enterprise that is like completely shit politics, but I don't care. I'm watching it and enjoying it anyway. So like, I'm not saying that it's making me enjoy it less or anything. It's just like that conversation made me eye roll a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, fair.
My girl Jadzia gets injured, which means that O'Brien has to do a lot more shit to like get, you know, things on track. This is the part where no one's trusting anyone, which I think makes for a really fun tension. I kind of didn't understand why Sisko was gonna blow the ship up if they didn't do what they needed to do? Was it
to
because
prevent war?
Was it
to
because
the war.
I get that, but like I kind of miss like this. Did the changeling person make the Defiant into a weapon or something? Was that what was happening? Because I kind of missed that whole like. I know he like put stuff in shit, but like I don't know what it meant.
Because of the sabotage, they didn't have control of like any of the command level functions. So basically what the like changeling plan was is the Defiant was going to go to the Zenkathy colony and like just blow it up, right? It was going to attack it, and they couldn't
got it.
They didn't have they controls
stop.
To like yeah, so that was why okay. they were going to self-destruct as like, you know.
Yeah. Okay. I felt like for me, like it didn't really matter. It was like, okay, something bad was happening. They had to stop it. Like I didn't need to know all the details, but now in talking about it, I'm not upset that I asked what the details were.
Yeah, fair. So when you're talking about the tension and no one trusts anyone, like I kind of mentioned this before in kind of our initial thoughts, that the scene in the mess hall where all the senior officers are taking the blood samples from each other and to find out if one of them is of the changeling, it's really similar to one of the scenes in the 1938 short story Who Goes There by John W. Campbell, which was published under a pseudonym, Don A. Stewart, which is, this novella is the basis for John Carpenter's film adaptation of The Thing, or the original film from 1951, Christian Nyby's The Thing from Another World, which is also an adaptation of the same story, but without the whole like shape-shifting element. It's interesting, though, that you know the Thing from Another World, that the 51 adaptation is more directly cited as an influence for this episode, as opposed to the 82 John Carpenter film, which includes the whole like shape-shifting thing. But yeah, it's the whole idea of like paranoia is a good, it's not a good thing, it's a good thing, well sometimes it's a good thing, it keeps us alive, but it's an interesting thing to explore among our characters, and ultimately it's not something we see a lot in Star Trek, again because to invoke the Roddenberry box again, like our Starfleet officers are always supposed to get along and trust each other and, you know, give us these unrealistic expectations of what the adult working world is like and what, you know, meetings will be like and everything else. So yeah, it was just it was a fun thing to explore because we don't often see it.
Now I'm like, would I like The Thing? So one thing I found really amusing in the episode is that even though Odo's constantly saying that he doesn't understand his species that well, he's the one that's giving them the most answers about his species. Like, it's almost like it's accidental, or like he doesn't realize as much as he knows. He doesn't realize he knows as much as he does, I mean. For example, when they're trying to figure out, you know, who's the changeling, he says to Sisko, oh, it can't be you, you're bleeding, because if it was coming, if a piece of Odo fell off of him, it would turn to goo again.
So you had something interesting here, Elise, about Odo's status as, you know, a changeling himself, but like not a founder, like, you know, the ways in which he can inform the investigation for the changeling because he himself is one, even though he's not a founder.
No, I just meant, like, he knows more about his species than he thinks he does, I feel like. I don't know.
Can you tell me more about that?
I already said this. I said the blood thing.
Oh, there we go.
Did you not hear me, or did you think I had more than to say?
I thought you might have had more to say. That's
I
fine.
Didn't. It was just, like, a one quick example.
Right. Yeah, so we talked about a little bit before when we talked about who was paired up with who for the investigations. But Eddington is back, as played by Kenneth Marshall. And this is the character, you know, we first saw in The Search and then was also in The Dias Cast. And always, like, coming in him, like, late into the series as an outsider, has this sense of being coded as, like, a possible threat, if not a literal threat, a threat to kind of the status quo. Right. And they decided to use that kind of coding to make him the red herring in terms of who the infiltrator is and everything else. And after this episode aired, The internet went wild that Eddington was in fact a changeling infiltrator.
Oh, so like people thought he was still, even though he passed this episode?
Yeah. So they thought that that was going to be a plot point on the upcoming series. And then, yeah, it's interesting in which, you know, when even back then in the, like, 1995, in the fledgling fandom internets, how fan theories can influence the writing room, and more on that as we go on. But I did really think Marshall was really good this episode. It's probably been one of the episodes where we've seen the most Eddington, and he's had kind of the most, like, the biggest part to work with. And I thought he towed that line between is he or isn't he, do I trust him, don't I trust him, really, really well. I enjoyed his performance.
I really liked him too. I have more to say, but it's like it's related to future stuff, so I'm just gonna not say it.
One day more.
So the second thing that happens in this episode that makes me think of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, is the, like, very cliche, like, Odo versus Odo scene toward the end of the episode. People may remember that Martia was a changeling in the Klingon prison of Rorpente.
And can't believe I kissed you. Must be your lifelong ambition. Which, I mean, I would believe that. Of
So this brought me great joy, but I appreciated that this episode kind of was like, okay, you can't have like a lucky guess another time. I have no idea if they were thinking about that scene at all, but like in my heart of hearts, I want that to have been true. But they probably thought, okay, you can't have like a lucky guess on killing the wrong one twice. So instead of that, O'Brien's just going to be like, ain't nobody got time for that, ignores them, and then like goes on to continue his work, which was the smartest idea, because then the actual baddie like tries to stop him. So they know which guy is the baddie.
Exactly.
It was really interesting to have Odo fighting with the other changeling, especially after... And it's not just in this episode. Odo has said that changelings don't hurt each other, like, numerous times.
Well, and that being first mentioned, again, going back to that, the die is cast kind of two-parter. That's why the changeling infiltrator pretending to be the Romulan... Tell Shiar, General, let's Odo and Garrett go, right?
Yes, exactly. So this kind of Odo's sticking up for himself and his friends, and for what he thinks is right. So it's interesting, like the one changeling that was pretending to be the ambassador was willing to hurt Odo as well, I think. So it really does feel like it was self-defense. It was weird watching the bad changeling, I mean, we don't know their actual name, trying to connect with Odo. Like, it felt like an invasion of space to me.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it.
Yeah, I don't think it wasn't that. Like, I don't think he was, like, trying to link with him or anything necessarily. Like, I know, like, he was like offering that as an option, but like it read to me more as like a physical struggle. And then because they're both changeling and not solids, and they can, like, you know, as they shove and disrupt each other because they're not solids, the struggle leads to them disrupting their ability to hold their shape and return to their natural gelatinous form. So I don't know if I really read it like as anything more than like a physical like assault or like, you know, encounter or like, you know, struggle. But based on what we know of like how changelings link, it like I could see it being read that way too.
Yeah, I think part of it for me was that I didn't realize that you could be touching like that and not be linked, you know what I mean? So now that I think about it after, like, I think when Odo says, like, I'm not going to link with you or whatever, they make it clear that Odo is rejecting the link. I think at that point, it does seem more clear that it's just, like, a physical altercation. I just had already written my notes down. And so I wanted to point out that until that moment, that is what I felt, because I didn't have more information. So Odo becomes the first changeling to kill someone of his species, I guess. And I guess that's the first person he ever killed?
Directly, I mean...
Yeah, directly.
He may have condemned other people to their deaths when, you know, he was working for the Cardassians, but, you know...
He didn't swing the sword.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's some pretty heavy shit when you're estranged from your entire species in exile and choose your friends over their brand of ethnofascism.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know how that rumor is going to get back to, not rumor, but like how what happened is going to get described to the rest of the founders.
Yeah, there's only one way to find out. And you know what that way is, Elise?
So tune in.
Yeah, continue watching, continue listening, and we will follow up on that as appropriate.
Yes. I do want to point out that as we found out earlier, but they really hit it home now, I enjoyed that the changeling like whispered something into Odo's ear, and I kept being like, it always, whenever someone whispers into someone's ear and you like, I didn't remember what we were going to find out what he said, but it makes me always think of Lost in Translation. But he said, you're too late, we are everywhere. Which I think is a really good season finale last thought. It's very suspenseful, as I said earlier, and it makes me want to know more.
Yeah, and like I think it's a very kind of effective like line to close the episode and the season on, especially considering that the original idea and intent by the writers was to do kind of that more traditional TNG like two-part cliffhanger episode, and they were told they couldn't do a cliffhanger. So I think like, you know, kind of it leaves you with that sense of wanting to know what happens next without it, you know, being like a whole like best of both worlds moment.
Right. As I said earlier before we started recording, I am probably going to start rewatching TNG when I'm done with Enterprise, and everything that we've said since then has gotten me like more excited about it. I'm really looking forward to watching that a second time. I know this is a Deep Space Nine podcast, and Deep Space Nine is my favorite, but I still love all Star Trek.
All right. Well, Elise, we've been podcasting for a little bit. I've been sipping on my coffee as we podcast, and I'm feeling a little, I don't know, while I'm feeling more awake, I'm also feeling a little thirsty, a little dehydrated. I don't know about you. Are you thirsting for anyone this week?
Yeah, I have a couple. I actually have a couple of thirsts. The first being that, like Dax, being so excited about Sisko and Cassidy, like that is me whenever my friends start dating someone new. Like I'm always like very thirsty for like the details.
Fair enough.
But probably my real one is that before he, I guess, was kidnapped and or murdered, the real ambassador was en route to Ryza for vacation. Like, get it? We all know Ryza is for sluts. Unless, and that, but that's for a future episode. Yeah. Did you have any?
I didn't have any particular thirst candidates for this episode.
It wasn't the most thirsty episode. I did grasp at some straws here.
I did, as alluded to, that I think there are definitely a couple different things that could qualify as the most Star Trek thing about the episode. But ultimately, I chose it was the whole drama of the self-destruct sequence, which is definitely something across several series and movies that they do as like a plot point. Although I think the only time it actually went through with the sequence was Star Trek III: The Search for Spock.
Yeah. I'm just laughing at how many times I've seen that freaking ship blow up. They use that clip for everything.
Excuse me. Well, that's like my favorite part of Star Trek 4, right? When they're all, the whole Federation Council is watching Star Trek 3 with the Klingon ambassador on the big screen.
Yes. I don't really have a separate most Star Trek thing, so I'm just going to piggyback yours.
There you go. Well, Elise, was there anything else we forgot to mention that you wanted to flag?
I don't think so. I just wanted to thank everyone for sticking with us. You know, we're finishing season 3, and that is really exciting. And I'm looking forward to continuing.
Awesome. Well, Elise, until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, StoryGraph, at chicken_tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. And you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd as well at Mattyhugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. You can catch us on Twitter and Instagram together at podrace. And you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.